everybody, and welcome to, yes, still another edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. And as George Kell used to say all the time on TV, today I'm joined by two big right-handers, Danny McClain, of course, and Larry Sorensen, longtime Major League pitchers. Terry Mills, the former Michigan player, Detroit Piston, coming up on the show. Hard to believe college basketball is actually beginning this week, but it is. And I got to start with something else, though, because I haven't had either of you guys on here in a position to comment on really one of the biggest stories baseball's seen in a long time. And I know you've been apprised of this. I know you've done your homework. I know you're ready to say something about Kim Ng, the new woman general manager of the Miami Marlins, obviously the first woman GM in baseball history. She's worked in the majors for over 30 years, held positions with the White Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers. Most recently served as MLB's senior vice president of baseball operations. And this after she started her career as an intern with the White Sox in 1990. And she said, quote, "I entered Major League Baseball as an intern, and after decades of determination, it is the honor of my career to lead the Miami Marlins as their next general manager," end quote. Boys, take it away. I'm going to listen. So is the audience.
Well, I didn't realize that she'd been with so many teams. I mean, she was with the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Dodgers. Well, the picture I like of her all the time is when she's standing in the outfield shagging fly balls. I'm just afraid. God, I first time I saw her with the glove on, I'm thinking, man, please give her a mask. God forbid.
You sexist. How do you know she can't catch a baseball?
Well, I don't, but I would love to see her pull one down, and I'd feel better about it. She's the second person of Asian descent, of course. Farhan Zaida is the other guy. But I want to tell you about another one that actually was a general manager, vice president of a baseball team. And this is a woman, too. And some of you will remember.
Are you trying to avoid the topic?
I am talking. No, I'm not avoiding it. I'll get back to it. Alice Sloan. You remember Alice Sloan?
She was Jim Campbell's secretary.
She was Jim Campbell's general manager.
Oh, come on. She ran the office.
She ran the ball club. She actually ran the ball. Oh, my God.
Well, we all knew Alice. Anytime you needed anything, you called up the office and you talked to Alice.
That's right. If you had a meeting to attend with Jim, she'd tell you all about it before you got there, because Jim didn't want to waste a lot of time with anybody, especially, God forbid, a player. Right. So, Alice was quite the power. And I think she's still with us, I believe, isn't she?
No.
She passed away.
I believe she passed
away. Sorry. Nice lady, though. Terrific lady. She was there all the many years that I was there.
Right, stop dodging the damn question. I want Sorensen's opinion, too, but you didn't speak enough about this woman, general manager.
Listen, she's got a great resume. Terrific resume, and there's no reason why a woman can't do the job.
Okay, Larry?
I agree with that 1,000%. She's very, very qualified. She's done all the proper positions to lead up to it. She's a good talent evaluator. I've been around her in a couple of larger group type meetings, and she's got some presence to her. I wish her all the luck. And she obviously knows Jeter from the New York days. And I know a guy that worked with her out in Los Angeles that speaks extremely highly of him that I trust. So I think it's a great hire and good for her.
And when you look at the job Derek has done almost single-handedly destroying the Marlins until there was a glimmer of hope this past season, could she be any worse, Larry?
Well, that Miami and Florida teams are tough, man. It's tough down there. But I hope she does a great job breaking the glass ceiling, as it were.
Well, I'll tell you, part of the glass ceiling that she broke is she really understands, I think, the nature of her environment and her community, because she has gone out and re-registered and regrouped all kinds of youth baseball, and including softball. So she is in the community. She's out there every day doing her thing, and there should be no reason why bad things should happen to
her.
And
they need help, because, as you guys know, I live there. In fact, Larry was living down in South Florida, too, until just the last year or so when he moved to Carolina. And you look at the problems that ball club has had. And I won't forget, a number of years ago, I had listen to this story, okay? I had a cable TV repairman, if I told you this, out at my apartment. A young guy, Cuban, of course, and it turned out he'd been a really good baseball player back in Cuba. Not good enough, but a really good one, and he got to the States. So I'm talking to him, and I said, I want you to answer a question for me. This is a Latino community. It's almost a foreign country down here in Miami, and that club can't draw flies. Will you tell me why not? He looks at me and says, you know what?
They got Puerto Ricans. They got Mexicans. They got Dominicans. They got Venezuelans. I don't care about that. If they had a team full of Cubans, we'd all be out there. But just because they're Latinos doesn't mean that we care, because we don't care if they're not Cubans. And that's one of the big reasons that club can't draw flies down
there. No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That is interesting. That's very interesting. You know what I didn't get is what a nice stadium it is.
That's gorgeous. Gorgeous.
I went to a game there. Man, it's really nice. I mean, the one in Tampa, you can nuke that immediately and nobody's going to miss it.
But, right,
That stadium's brutal, but that stadium in Miami is really, really nice.
Yeah, with the fantastic views out the outfield of downtown Miami. It's spectacular, but they just don't have a ball club, you know. And maybe this woman can do something. Look, we have been around general managers in all four of our major sports, and we've seen some bad ones. We've seen some men, veteran men with experience, who could not judge talent. So let's see. I'm with you guys.
If you depend on your staff to judge talent, you know, you just got to find people that surround yourself with that have a good eye.
The only thing really wrong with the baseball stadium in Tampa is the fact they built it on the wrong side of I-4. They built it on the west side of I-4 rather than the east side. And, of course, he's been petitioning now for about 10 years trying to destroy the one park and build another one on the east side of I-4, because there is no traffic west of I-4. I mean, you got to figure out a way to get to the ball game, and if they have a crowd one night, it's almost impossible.
I've been to a number of games there. I haven't had any problem getting in or out.
There's nobody there.
Well, I went to see a Tigers series. What do you expect? Of course,
Tigers
there.
Played the first game there, didn't they?
I don't recall that.
I wasn't there for that.
But you look at problems identifying. You look at problems identifying talent. Okay, over how many years? Then you look at the denizens of Ford Field in downtown Detroit.
Oh,
and a guy tweets me on Sunday night. He says, "Bob, tomorrow on the podcast, you need to state for the record that the FLs just got worked over by a former XFL quarterback to the tune of 20-0. Did you have poor taste enough to watch that game? I bet Brandon, Lions Wacko, that he is, didn't watch that game. Brandon, did you watch that game?
I caught part of that debacle.
And so, of course, the expected outcry from the feckless, lame Detroit media, finally, fire Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn. Why? I don't care what they do. And I think there are a lot of people like me, especially older people. Larry, you can relate to this because, like me, you are a Detroit native. You grew up a Wacko Detroit Lions fan just like me. Larry, I've had enough. How about you? Man. I don't care what they do.
Yeah, I've followed them since I was a kid, obviously, and still for some reason tune them in every Sunday, although I have to admit I'm married to a Steelers fan, so we switched back and forth, and it's a lot more fun watching the Steelers games right now than the Lions. But here in North Carolina, they're laughing at the Lions.
Yeah.
The fan base is laughing at Detroit.
Yeah, and this kid Walker yesterday, that quarterback, he looked like Joe Montana in his prime, didn't he?
The FLs will make any quarterback look like that.
Not really.
This kid's got a great arm. I was thinking, man, he could be the number one pitcher with the Tigers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how hard he threw the damn football.
I confess to having taken, are you ready for this? I don't generally do this, a nap during part of the game. And when I woke up, I just did here in New York where I am today. I just flicked on, that's a game we got, the Eagles-Cleveland Clowns. Watch that instead. And somebody sent this on Twitter last night too. I didn't hear it. Matt Patricia on the WJR radio postgame show. I'm quoting, "They play better than we did. We didn't execute well enough. We've got to coach better. I've got to coach better. And we've got to play better." Now, this person who posted this didn't say which WJR postgame show. Was it yesterday's, or was it 2 weeks ago, or was it 2 years ago? Because the WJR postgame show rarely changes, does it? So at some point, we're going to have Sheila Hamp Ford, yes, making the decision about the latest GM and the latest head coach and the latest five-year Detroit Lions rebuilding program. And you know what their philosophy is, of course? Hey, let's give the guy a chance. Every time people laugh when they bring in the latest head coach. Folks, I'm here to tell you, and Larry, apparently you need to be told, and Brandon, you need to be told, Denny's a Chicago Bears fan. He's from Chicago. There is hope for some of you people out there who need it. You can kick your FL's addiction. I did it years ago. You don't have to spend your Sundays in the beautiful fall watching the Detroit Lions play football.
I'm not a quitter.
Well,
you call you. It's either. The numbers out there, folks. It's on the internet. You call FL's Anonymous. But people listen, are standing by it. To take your call right now, and they will help you recover from your addiction.
All right, I got a headline for you for Thursday afternoon. The Lions will be playing Houston. What a great game that's going to be. Houston and Detroit, huh? For Turkey Day.
Well, Denny, let me ask you this question. Since we know what happened yesterday to this XFL quarterback and the Lions, now they're going to face Deshaun Watson on Thursday. What do you think might be the outcome there?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it could be ugly.
Oh, man. I mean, this kid can run and fly and everything else. He's like Superman if he's healthy.
So how fitting is it that on Thanksgiving we have not one but two turkeys? We got the FL's game. Then we got two other once proud franchises, the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington, I guess we can't say Redskins anymore. Oops, I just did. And then we get that real game we talked about, the Steelers hosting Baltimore, Pittsburgh 10-0. That should be a pretty good game. Can they go undefeated? They actually play Washington at home the following week. I'm looking at 11-0, 12-0 after that, and then at Buffalo, which could be a tough game.
No, I think that they absolutely can keep going undefeated. Yeah. They beat you a lot of different ways, too. You know, that one time it's the defense, the next time Roethlisberger gets it going, the next time they get a good running game. They've got a lot of weapons, and Tomlin is an amazing coach.
Well, the proof's in the pudding. I mean, come on, the guy's been there a long time now, and look what he's done. You can say, well, he's had Roethlisberger. Well, you know, he had Le'Veon when he was in his prime. He's got great defenses and so on and so forth. But let's face it, the guy is a coach. Now, as you know, as you get closer and closer to having an unbeaten team, the 72 Dolphins always have a toast wherever they are when any unbeaten team threatens their perfect 14-0 record and finally loses. Sorry to say, one fewer toast this year, boys. Did you hear this? Didn't get a lot of publicity. Jake Scott died last Thursday. Did you hear how he died?
No.
Shades of Dick Raddatz, the monster from Detroit who fell down the stairs and died in his home. Jake Scott fell down and hit his head.
Oh, my God.
Five-time Pro Bowl safety, Super Bowl MVP as a defensive back, Super Bowl MVP, the Dolphins' all-time leader with 35 interceptions, a legend from that team. He was 75 years old. Now, we have the big upset, I thought, yesterday in the National Football League was the New York Jets game. Not that the Jets won. Of course, they didn't. Not that it was remotely interesting against the almost as bad L.A. Chargers. The biggest upset occurred when Greg Gumbel, up in the broadcast booth, and his partner Rich Gannon threw it down to the hot chick sideline reporter before the game. And there, standing there instead of a hot chick, was former University of Michigan kicker Jay Feely. Didn't they get the memo from the National Football League front office? You can't have a male who's actually played in the National Football League as a sideline reporter. Who says you could do that? You guys are speechless over this. I see. I can't be too speechless. I shut you both up finally, once and for all.
You know, apparently there's exceptions to anything. It depends on who you know. Maybe he's working for one of those teams. Who the hell knows?
I've been a sideline reporter for the University of Michigan football. There's no reason you can't collect good information, regardless of what sex you are, Bob.
Not true, Larry. You have to be a hot chick to collect good information. We know that because we watch all the college football games on TV and we watch all the NFL games on TV.
let me run two other things by you guys. As I think we all know, as Stafford goes, so go the Lions most of the time. Yesterday he was terrible. He was just awful. I've got a question for you. Why the hell, he's got a bad hand, a real bad hand. Why the hell would they send him out in a game? They can't win anything. They're not going to win anything. It's like watching the death die slower and slower. And lo and behold, he's out there playing. Why?
Maybe he's the only one that can get guys into the right place, and that didn't work because I watch him play, and I see guys looking at the quarterback spot like, where am I supposed to be?
Yeah,
I'm out here, but where am I supposed to be really? You know, it's very confusing watching them try to line up to run plays.
Yeah, you know, Denny, he also has a reputation to uphold, and it is a good reputation. People rip Matt Stafford a lot. But the rap on this guy is the rep, I should say. He's one tough MF-er. And this guy plays through pain. Obviously, he's been out some point with injuries. He's had some injuries, but they say he is one tough guy. And just knowing what we know about Matt Stafford, he's not going to beg out of a game, especially an important game. Because remember, the NFL's playoff hopes, quote unquote, are still technically alive.
Well, if he's healthy, I see him playing. If he's not healthy, and if they had a decent chance, I'd say play him if he wanted to play. I mean, I totally
he wants to play.
His option.
Yeah.
But, I just don't think he should be out there. He's throwing the ball over everybody's head one time. The next time he's throwing it at their toes, he just doesn't have the control in his hands and the feeling in his hands that he normally needs.
And we're sure that that's his thumb that he's throwing over and under right. and everything. But be that as it may, there comes that fine point between am I hurting or helping the team
yeah.
because of my injury. And they're just, man, that game yesterday, you can say technically still alive, stick a fork in them.
You guys are both tough guys. You both pitched in the big leagues a long time. And I'm sure there were plenty of times when your arm didn't feel right. And you went out there anyway because you didn't want your
Jenny
teammates
set the standard.
To think you were wussing out.
Thank God for cortisone.
Yeah.
I live with cortisone.
You still do, too, because it never leaves your body. Larry, did you get a lot of cortisone shots?
I had a couple, not too many, but.
You knew more about it then, right?
Yeah, we knew a lot more about it. Plus, I had a delivery and didn't throw all that hard. I threw 90, but I never had a lot of arm troubles, so I didn't need them that much. I never had the usual stiffness and soreness, but it went away by the next start, generally.
I have to tell you about a couple of our sponsors. So why don't we start with Luke Nowacki? We think you should let Luke from Pinnacle Wealth Strategies help you plan for future family obligations and your own retirement. Tell you this all the time, folks. Get on the phone and call him. Luke's track record of success and decades of experience will enable him to create that custom solution for you or your business. Retirement gets upon us real quickly. You're looking at three old timers here right now with about 1 foot in the retirement area. So you want to call Luke. Here's the number, 248-663-4748. It's not going to cost you anything. There's not going to be any hard sell. It's a complimentary consultation. Then if you feel comfortable, you let Luke Nowacki do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's knowledgeable. He's caring. He's ethical. That's Luke Nowacki. I'm going to give you the number again. Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748, with advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And mortgage rates are still at all-time lows. If your current mortgage rate is above 3%. Hall Financial simply asks you, what are you waiting for? You could be saving money, folks. And currently at Hall, almost 70% of all loans don't even require an appraisal. If for some reason your mortgage does, for this month of November only, Hall Financial will pay the appraisal charge for you up to $500. Remarkably, closing times have now sped up even more. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial are closing in just 10 or fewer business days. So just go to our No Filter Sports Podcast website and you click on the Hall Financial link you'll see right there. That'll get you started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Coming up later on the show today, Terry Mills, the Romulus, Michigan native, former University of Michigan standout, does the basketball games now on the radio, has for years, and the college basketball season is coming up. Starts this week. Michigan's going to play Bowling Green. Michigan State takes on Eastern. But the big story with Michigan is the continuing saga with Jim Harbaugh. So, boys, with that triple overtime win at Piscataway against Rutgers the other night, Saturday night, do you think Harbaugh might have saved his job?
I don't think he was going to get fired anyway.
I don't know. I
think it's going to be his option, period.
No way.
And he will do the right thing for the university. I don't know what that means, but he's got a lot of money still at stake, too.
He's just signed through next year, Danny. Contract's just signed through next year.
He's got another $7 or $8 million if they choose to get rid of him.
Michigan's got the money. Larry said, I think the last time he was on the show, that he thinks Harbaugh's gone. I think Harbaugh's gone. So that's why I asked the question if that was enough, and I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either. I think that what worries me more than anything is I watch the way they play, and same as the Lions. They're not lining up the right places. They're not protecting the football. The fundamentals of the game are not being executed very well. And you can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't do the little things right when you need to, that doesn't always make up for it. I don't think that he's going to be back. I think they'll find a graceful way to word it so that he's out. But I don't think this game is going to have much impact that they won. Had they lost, I think it might have made a bigger difference.
You know, had this been pro sports and had they lost to Rutgers, the coach would have been fired, you would think, anyway,
yeah,
right
so
after
too.
The game. Now, Michigan and Harbaugh were being ripped by everybody, especially us, coming in. But the thing that I don't think is fair is in the wake of this game, they're still being ripped, and they won. How many key players are out right now for Michigan? They started that both of their starting offensive tackles were out the previous two games. Both players missed Saturday's game. A third absence along the offensive line. Starting center Andrew Vastardis didn't play due to an injury. And what the hell has happened to Joe Milton? We saw this kid play last year, and we thought that's the next Michigan All-American quarterback. He's totally lost his confidence, and thank goodness for Cade McNamara. He came in. But, I mean, Michigan fans, you look on social media today, and they're talking as though they lost that game.
Well, I think our quarterback just has been hit so many times, he doesn't know if he's coming, going, or in between. I mean, once you start getting hit all the time, there is not very much coming behind it. And one other thing, I was very surprised at Tucker over at MSU saying publicly out to Harbaugh, listen, there's other things wrong with the football team, and I'm paraphrasing, you need to look under the hood. Now, anybody got any idea what he means about what
Urban
part
Meyer.
Of the car are we missing?
That was Urban Meyer who made that statement.
Well, I got Tucker. Tucker was right there saying it too.
Urban's got to be careful what he's saying because about Michigan, because, you know, some people have speculated that he could be in line to get that job. I don't believe that.
Lots of people speculate about a lot of crazy things.
Yeah, they do.
Denny, you were talking about quarterbacks that could be pitchers. Milton is a guy with an unbelievable cannon, but trying to get it in the vicinity is a big problem.
Larry, he looked so good when he played last year, and you thought, oh, my God.
And he looks great in a uniform. I love the way that McNamara came in and the way that he played. He had some swagger to him. He looked like he was confident. Yeah. He looked like he knew what he wanted to do and what he wanted to get accomplished. He moved people around to their right spots and was pretty good in his execution of things. I love the way he played.
You know, one good thing about him, he's got a great name for a quarterback, Cade McNamara.
I like that name. From Nevada.
That name. It sounds like a cartoon on the front of the Chicago Tribune.
He had originally committed to Notre Dame, you know, and then backed out of that and went to Michigan. Now, I'm not going to blame Jim Harbaugh and his staff at all for starting Joe Milton this year. Milton even scared Dylan McCaffrey away, one of the top quarterbacks coming out of high school in America. McCaffrey took one look at Joe Milton, felt it obvious he couldn't beat him out, or decided that he wasn't going to play anyway. And now Milton has just disappeared. And we've got Cade McNamara, and you know damn well he's going to start at Ann Arbor come Saturday. But I want to say this for the Michigan fans out there who were saying, can you believe it? We almost lost to Rutgers. Only Rutgers? I told you guys about Greg Schiano. The minute he took the job to come back to RU as head coach, here is a man who's a New Jersey native who finally started to get the top Jersey talent to stay home. How can you finish eighth in the country in the national polls at the end of the season at Rutgers? But he did. And he stopped letting these kids, or at least you can't get them all. New Jersey is such a great high school football state. You can't get them all to stay home. But they're going to Michigan. They're going to Ohio State. They're going to Penn State. They're going to Michigan State. He made a big mistake leaving a fantastic situation. He goes to the pros. He's this college guy coming in trying to deal with grown men. He turned a lot of people off. Tampa got rid of him, bounced around. He was Ohio State's defensive coordinator for a while. Now, Greg Schiano, who is not an old man, is back where he belongs. So don't think that Rutgers isn't going to be a real quality opponent for everybody in the Big Ten. This year, you can ask Michigan and Michigan State about that already.
Yeah, they've put together a good team, no question about that. You know, I hate seeing Michigan try to use the injury excuse because I hate to break this. Everybody is beat up at this time of year. Everybody has injuries and issues with COVID and with the way that they've been practicing and everything else. You can't go to a single school and not find one that isn't having the same kind of problems. They just look disorganized and played poorly.
It's such a funny year, Larry. You do the Wake Forest games on radio. You see a lot of crazy things down there. So they were talking about, well, how far, you know, is Indiana going to fall out of the top 10? Not too far because they look good. And I don't know if you guys watched this game. I did not think Ohio State looked that impressive in barely holding off the Hoosiers on Saturday. But, you know, you look at what's going on. How can Penn State be 0-5 for the first time in its entire history. Can James Franklin suddenly not coach anymore?
And remember, a couple of years ago, James Franklin was the end-all, be-all for everybody.
Yeah.
And he was the talk about being the hottest coach going to any job that he wanted. And now that's
sure.
all turned around in just
a couple of years. It's sometimes, don't you think to yourself, with all this COVID stuff, this crazy year that 2020 is, you just got to throw it out.
That's right. You got to throw a lot of it out. But you know what? They didn't have enough practicing time. They didn't have enough scheme time, plan time. They just never had any of that.
Same time as everybody else.
Well, no, I understand that. Yeah. But everybody else is having problems too. So we've got more injuries than I ever remember in college football. I mean, every day we get a new list and some of these guys don't even play and they're getting hurt, for God's sakes. The game is up and down. You got to be careful.
Let me tell you what happened to Wake Forest this past 10 days. Last Tuesday at 4:45, we were on a conference call with the coach who said, we're ready to go. We're looking good. We're playing Duke. 10 o'clock at night, they put out a release saying game won't be played due to not enough players. Okay, so no game over the weekend against Duke.
Right.
Supposed to play Louisville this coming weekend. Sunday comes out with an announcement because of the schedule changes. Louisville will not play Wake Forest on Saturday. Louisville will play Boston College Saturday. Wake Forest will play Louisville on December 19th, which is the day of the conference championship. So Wake Forest and Louisville are supposed to be playing December 19th, which will be the same day that probably Clemson and Notre Dame are playing each other for the conference championship. But there could be three or four other conference games being played the same day.
Michigan State was supposed to play Maryland, for Christ's sake. Last week, and Wednesday, the game gets canceled. They did that wacko switcheroo out west in the Pac, the Pac-12, where they had two games. Help me, Brandon, if you can, with the teams involved. Two of the teams couldn't play, so the two remaining teams said, "Okay, we'll just play each other instead." Then that's the way they did that. And then the game between Clemson and Florida State.
Yeah.
It was postponed hours before kickoff on Saturday when medical personnel from both universities could not agree, supposedly, that it was safe to play. So the Tigers learned a day earlier one of their players tested positive for COVID-19. So what? Kid's going to be fine. He's not going to have any symptoms. Are you telling me that one player tests positive and you start calling
Bob,
these?
It's not just the one player,
Bob. Bob, that's their protocol. And you got a guy walking around in front of 50 or 60 other guys and other people that
exactly.
are going in and out of the clubhouse. You cannot have somebody just be walking freely because he's the only
They put him, they were going to put him out, but one guy tests positive. So, okay, he's not, keep him away from
him. Bob, that's
but it's
their
the contact, the contact tracing.
Right. He traveled with the rest of the team.
Unless you do the whole thing.
And he did travel with the team. So he was exposed to all those guys. In the Wake Forest situation, one player tested positive, but he had seven suite mates that he'd been living with.
Right,
so that all of a sudden puts them at risk, which means don't have the minimum number of players required to play the game available.
Right, but you saw in the wake of this thing with Clemson and Florida State, old Dabo was not happy about this. Old Dabo thought just that Florida State didn't particularly want to play Clemson. And who does want to play Clemson besides Alabama or Notre Dame? So, there's so much
stuff. Yeah, they're in a pretty large urinating contest about that right now.
Yeah, as usual. So we've got a situation, as we said, where Penn State is 0-5. They're coming to Ann Arbor. I think, fellas, from Jim Harbaugh's standpoint, this would not be a good time on Saturday for Penn State to get its first win of the season.
No. Is that us? I
agree with that 1,000%.
Yep. Now, Northwestern had that surprise win over Wisconsin on Saturday. So they've got a 3:30 kickoff at East Lansing. They got a mess going on there. And it said, you look at everything that's going on everywhere in sports right now. And it's just, we got the vaccines. They are coming. In fact, they're coming at the end of December, the end of next month. These companies are saying they've got, are you ready for this? 20 million vaccines ready to go by the end of December, and they're going out to the neediest, the people who are in the most danger. And I'm telling you, fellas, I'm predicting anyway, that by April 1st, opening day for baseball next year, this is not going to be a problem. Things are going to be pretty normal. Do you agree or not?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Do you agree or not?
What we don't want to do is they're promoting the fact that this is 95% effective. Let's hope to God it's absolutely correct, because everybody's got different DNA, and could be one guy's DNA is affected by it, some guy's isn't. So, I mean, we won't know that for a while.
And whether or not they get the enough vaccines out to the general public to make it to say, okay, we're going to open the door. Anybody that wants to come in can come in. How do you know if they've had a vaccine or not and are inside spreading it amongst each other? I don't see by April 1st. I'm not sure that I see the stadiums just being wide open and let anybody come in and put 50,000 people in a stadium together. I don't know. I don't know the mechanics and how the general that's dispersing the vaccines, who they're going to go to first and how they're going to do it after that point and how long it's going to take. They, oddly enough, they didn't call me up to ask my opinion on it.
Larry, but, Bob, Larry and Bob and Brandon, are you going to get the shot as soon as it's available to you?
That's a good question, Danny. Boy, I've been thinking about that. And you know, and there's another issue, a much larger issue than whether Larry or I or Brandon are going to get it. You got a whole host of these wackos, and that's what they are, wackos out there who are anti-vaxxers. Sure. They don't care what the vaccine or what the disease is. They ain't going to get it.
Right.
So you're raising an interesting issue. I've thought about it, and I thought for me, well, there's no reason why I should get it. But then I thought, if I can be guaranteed, if we all can be guaranteed that there aren't going to be any deleterious side effects or long-lasting side effects, we really have to get it, don't we? Don't we kind of owe that to society?
Well, I'm going to see who says it's safe to get it.
Well, all the scientists and the medical.
Well, it depends which scientists and which medical people.
Well, the FDA. I mean, they're not just throwing drugs out there on the open market. That's not the way we do things. So,
well, do we really want to get into the way we do things?
Yeah, right. I mean, these things. But I'm telling you, I flew in to New York City, where I live half the year, on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, against all the recommendations about traveling.
Yeah, I take that back. I flew into Newark and took the train into New York City.
How full were the plane?
Well, the planes are full, and this is what I want to tell you about. The reason the planes are full is because they've canceled so many flights because people are so afraid to fly.
Sure.
But for those of you out there who've spent a lot of time, you've ever been to New York City, you know what this town is like. And this morning, I'm crossing 34th Street in the middle of the morning rush hour. No traffic. I crossed right against the light. I'm not saying the sidewalks are deserted. I'm not saying the streets here in New York are deserted, but I've never seen anything like it. And so many businesses on every street are gone. They're out of business, gone.
Really?
And the ones that are still in business have plywood and wood put up over the glass in front of the stores because of they were afraid in the wake of the election there were going to be riots if Trump won, which Trump thinks he did, of course, still.
Of course.
But
of course.
So it's just, look, it's bizarre everywhere. It's just strange everywhere. And we are going to get over this, folks. We are going to get past this. Larry, your wife works in the medical health field. Is she concerned?
She is concerned
about the vaccines, their efficacy, or whether people will get them?
Again, she's very concerned that they've done enough testing, but trials and following the trials all the way through instead of just saying, hey, you know, the initial results look pretty good. Let's go ahead and throw it out there. Let's follow it all the way through. Let's see what happens to the people after the amount of time that we're used to testing these drugs. Maybe not years. Doesn't have to take years, but they have protocols that have been set forth for drugs. And if those are put in place and if the right people are saying that it's good to use them, yeah, we'll get them.
Well, folks, the three old guys you're listening to right now all are wearing glasses. You should see us on our little Zoom closed circuit feed.
Good and segue. And nice,
yes, thank you. And that's because we can't see feces in front of us without our glasses. You know what we're talking about. The disease is presbyopia. Maybe you're too young and you don't know what we're talking about. If you're over 45, though, you have it. You have to wear reading glasses. They've been getting multifocal lens implants, so many of us, from Dr. Yaldo in Detroit. And these multifocal lens, a great operation. Eli's had it and says it's going to change your life. This operation from Dr. Yaldo is going to enable you to read without glasses, to see the tiniest of print, and also see perfectly at a distance. It is a life-changing and a lifetime-lasting procedure. Now, for people under 45, like our producer, Brandon McAfee, they're still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo. This is the most precise in the world. It enables them to throw away annoying contacts and glasses, and in most cases, get better than 20/20 vision. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine, they say. You get a free evaluation, doesn't cost you anything, to find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can't even imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or just go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them Eli and No Filter Sports sent you. You get $1,500 off the regular price. Speaking of Eli, he drives a Lincoln from Star. That's because Star is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. Family business started half a century ago by Hoot McInerney, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. Five-star reviews pour in all the time to those folks. Star makes buying or leasing a car during the pandemic efficient and easy. One woman wrote, "I just bought a Nautilus online from Star. It was super easy. It was delivered to my home, and they sanitized it in my driveway." Everybody in Michigan and in Northwest Ohio and in mid-Michigan, and wherever you go in the area, they know Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. And buying a Lincoln at Hoot McInerney Star, you're going to find both the buying and service elements to be hassle-free and as effortless as possible. So drive the Star of American auto luxury. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900, or just buy it online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, fellas, we're going to talk to Terry Mills in a little bit about what's been going on with the NBA and the Detroit Pistons. But my heavens, they get this new general manager who walks in the door, and they've just flipped this roster, haven't they?
Yep.
Friday night, they agreed to a deal with – and you look at some of these contracts that are being thrown around right now in the wake of last week's NBA draft. They signed Jeremy Grant. How many NBA fans even know who that is? And they signed him to a three-year, $60 million deal. He's 26. You remember the Grant twins, Harvey and Horace. He's the son of one of the two guys. They say he's an ascending player. And he had a great season with Denver. He's athletic. He's strong, versatile defender, they say. Good offensive game, complimentary player. For that kind of money, you better be more than a complimentary player. Averaged 12 points, 3.5 rebounds. And then, of course, they signed centers Mason Plumlee, Jahlil Okafor, the Duke boys. They got wing Josh Jackson. So what do you make of what's going on here with this franchise?
One thing. They also signed Donovan Mitchell for $195 over a five-year deal.
Million.
$195 million. Yeah. That's better than walking around money. I guarantee you that. And there's going to be a lot more coming. I mean, listen, I think they did the best there was staying in the, the way they kept the players away from everybody, and everything the players did seemed to be working for just about everybody. So we got to applaud them for the way they structured their lives to stay under quarantine this period of time. But because the NBA's got a long way to go, folks.
It'll be interesting to see how their bubble develops as the rules are relaxed a little bit, and how guys start stretching the rules and how that starts spacing out. Now, you're dealing with a much, much lesser number. You're dealing with 15, 16 guys instead of 120 guys like you do with a football program, and it's easier to manage that. And you talk about the way they set up their protocols, even inside the arenas and everything, with different colored bands around your wrist and where you could go and where you had to stay away. My understanding is everything was pretty well nailed down as they were doing that bubble. But ascending is a great word. Does that mean young, or does that mean he had five good games in a row, or does that
they
mean
hope he's going to be good? That's what it means. They hope he's going to be good.
Potential.
So early Saturday morning, the Pistons acquired DeLon Wright in a three-team trade. But fellas, Christian Wood, this guy came out of nowhere. They thought, well, here's a cornerstone of our franchise. He left. They let him go. He signed a three-year, $41 million deal with the Rockets on the very first day of free agency. So when we're looking at the Pistons, no wonder Eli and some people don't even want to talk about him anymore. They've been mired in such mediocrity for some time. Are they just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic right now?
I think we're also at a point where you've got to wait till everything lands a little bit. Formulating an opinion today might not necessarily mean anything by Thanksgiving, because it could change again. So it's a team in flux, no question about that.
I just like to see him be competitive consistently. Yeah.
How are the Pistons a better team without Andre Drummond? Andre Drummond is still only 27. He's a two-time NBA All-Star. He's led the league in rebounding four times. He's one of the top 10 shot blockers in the game, and they let him go to Cleveland last year. I don't know, in these deals you make, you usually look, well, who's the best player in this trade? Brandon, you got any thoughts on that? Because you're a Pistons guy.
I'm not a big fan of Andre Drummond. I just felt at the end of the
why not? What don't you like about him, and what didn't they like about him?
I don't like it the fact that in the last 10 minutes of a game, he's useless. What happens? They'll hack him. He'll miss every free throw. I mean, there was times where they weren't
so
even
the check.
Him. Yeah, there was another guy did pretty well under that formula.
If you That's think right. that Andre Drummond is Shaquille O'Neal, I don't know what to tell you.
That's extremely valid.
But I don't feel like Andre Drummond is going to do anything for the Cleveland Cavaliers either. So I don't know. I didn't think that he was a guy after having a max contract that we would want to keep around. To tell you the truth, I'm actually willing to give Troy Weaver a chance here. He's got a whole
He's the new GM.
He's got a whole brand new team now. You know, we're looking at a lot of young guys. Who knows how these, you know, how the Killian Hayes or the Isaiah Stewart or Sidek Bays, how these draft picks are going to turn out. But at least it's something different. I mean, we've been looking at a lot of nothing from the Detroit Pistons over the last X amount of years. So, hey, let's at least see how it goes. And, hell, we didn't even get to watch it.
What exactly is the different, though? What exactly is the different? And I've got to admit, I'm a casual Pistons fan from distantly removed. So what exactly is different, or are they just interchangeable bodies? Is it a youth movement intended to take several years, or is it just different people that are going to look for a way to get out of Detroit?
That's the question. And I asked rhetorically if they're just rearranging the proverbial deck chairs on the Titanic. So you look at basketball and you look at hockey as opposed to baseball and football, for instance, where they're interlocking pieces of a puzzle and guys really have to learn how to play together. They really have to understand what the guy's going to do, when he's going to do it. You got all of these people coming into Detroit now on this team. It's going to take them a while, I would think, to begin to learn how to play together.
To me, the difference with basketball is if you find two guys that can dominate, then all of a sudden you're a big time contender, because you can fit a couple of guys that maybe aren't quite as good as the other parts on other teams. But if you have two guys that are dominating,
you still got guys number 6, 7, 8, 9 coming off the bench, and they got to mesh too with all these parts. So it's going to take a little bit of time. And obviously another factor here is, look, I don't know this man at all. Okay. But maybe he's got a huge ego and he wants people to understand that this is his team. Now, these are his moves, his imprimatur. What do you think, Brandon?
Well, yeah, absolutely. He's gonna try something new, try something that's a little out of the box. Why not? It hasn't been working lately.
Going nowhere with what they had.
We didn't even get a chance to see these guys perform in the NBA bubble. Yeah. Remember, they didn't get a shot. So, you know, throw out something, you know, new. Maybe some of these young picks will hit, and then we might be calling this guy a genius in a couple of years.
Maybe, and then maybe not. And we'll see. And this is at a precarious time for this franchise. They got this gorgeous new arena downtown, and nobody seems to care. Despite that people look, I just get the idea, and you say this about the Wings too. I get the idea that a lot of people in Detroit, they're just tired of the Pistons. They're tired of the Red Wings also, and maybe they were spoiled by all the success those franchises had. And as a result, they're kind of staying away from these games, and that ain't good.
I don't think that's true. I think they just don't want to go downtown with all of the things that are going on in the environment down here. Nobody wants to walk into something.
Oh,
they've had trouble drawing.
Yeah, that was before COVID.
If they can't win, this town historically is one way. Listen, if you win, they'll come down. If you're competitive, they'll come down. But they won't come down if you're a bad team year after year after year. Sooner or later, the fans run out of gas.
Unless your name is the Detroit Lions.
Run out of gas and money. People are just spending their money in a lot different ways now.
Yep,
and back to the original point is they're finding out that there are other things to do out there besides watch bad sporting events.
Yeah. Yippee-dippee.
How much you guys think live TV, plays a role in this? And I'll just tell you this. I actually thought about getting a press pass to drive down. It's, you know, 45 minutes from me from New York City, drive down to Rutgers on Saturday night, sit in the press box and watch the Michigan game. And I thought to myself, it's on in my living room. Why? I mean, how many fans say, well, the game's on TV. Does that hurt the gate?
Sure. It has to hurt the gate, but are they then not going to watch them, period? Are they going to go do something else rather than watch the game on TV? That's what you got to find out.
I think TV these days has a much bigger impact on attendance habits than it did back in the day when everybody said that TV was going to kill the different sports when they first started out, because people still went to the games. I think now not only are you watching Michigan playing Rutgers, but you're watching three other games at the same time. You know, we're flipping back and forth between the Steelers and the Lions yesterday, and you're just able to see so much more all the time.
The production
value.
And recording the games too.
Bob, isn't it true that when the NBA came back on TV during this pandemic stuff, that the television ratings went way down?
Well, they went up at first. Remember, Brandon and I got into that a number of times. Brandon thought they'd be gangbusters, and I thought, no, people are pissed. A lot of people were pissed at the NBA, especially, and let's face it, over the Black Lives Matter thing and the way in which that was displayed, and ratings across the board took a dive. I mean, you guys, Denny, you love golf. Masters had the worst ratings in, what, 50 or 60 years, whatever it is. I mean, there's just... There's this mass malaise, if you will. I think almost everybody nowadays is a little touch of depression. It's not the world anymore. It's not the world we loved. It's not the world that we knew. Everything's topsy-turvy, and man, everything is bleeped up.
That's a real thing, and people are starting to do a lot of studies on that now, is exactly what is the COVID depression and where is the country at as a whole and the world as a whole. And the psychologists and the social people are studying that exact same thing to find out how everybody's habits are changing.
All right, folks. Well, let's go to the mailbag now before we get to Terry Mills. And I want to let you know that we are on social media. You can tweet us. That would be at Larry Sorensen. That would be at MU2Denny or at Bob Page Sports. And the first one comes up today from Christopher Back, who is a recovering Detroit Lions fan with uncommon intelligence and impeccable taste. Christopher Back tweets, I went grocery shopping and listened to the No Filter podcast with guest Greg Landry on Sunday instead of watching the FLs. You know what? Nothing's changed since when Landry was the Lions quarterback. Same old crap. At least, you know, at least the Lions were exciting when Greg was quarterback, and that's why I was such a fan. A lot of us were. C. Michael Raymond says, I hope Sunday's loss puts an end once and for all for this foolishness of playoff talk for the Lions. But Jeffrey Sinninger is quick to add, I don't believe people watch these Lions games thinking that if they win, they're in the playoff hunt. This team always stinks, starting with number 9. People are actually surprised that they lose games like they did on Sunday. Why? They always have, my whole life. So why have any expectations for the Detroit Lions? But Chris Mayberry perhaps has the best answer of all when he says, Bob, if you're not watching the Lions, you're missing so much comedy. It's a hilarious way to spend a Sunday afternoon. But I'll tell you, folks, I couldn't even do my Lions lament today because they weren't even in that game on Sunday, and I'm not sure there was much comical about that. So on the show the other day, on Eli's This Day in Sports, it marked the anniversary of Malice at the Palace. Freddie Heumann was on, and he told the story of longtime Detroit radio man Ron Grubbs, who was a big fan of this show, and how Ronnie steadfastly, fearlessly manned his battle station at Press Row during the whole thing. So Ron responded to this on Twitter, and I'm going to read you guys what he wrote. So again, here's Ron Grubbs sitting at Press Row for Malice at the Palace, and he says, I was engineering that day for Indiana Pacers radio. Ron Artest lies down on the scorer's table right in front of me. He is perfectly calm. He takes my headsets off me, and he puts them on himself. Then he gives them back. ESPN's Jim Gray asked me if Ron went on the air, but he did not. Then Artest is hit in the crotch with a large drink, and he jumps into the stands. On his way, he bowls over Indiana Pacers play-by-play broadcaster Mark Boyle, who broke 5 vertebrae, broke his glasses, and got a cut over his eye. On the team bus later after the game, this is Ron Grubbs writing this, on the team bus later after the game, Ron Artest asks Mark how he got hurt. Mark looks at Artest like he's crazy. He says, you did it! Artest says he has no memory of that whatsoever. During the melee, Pistons coach Larry Brown tries to calm the crowd, but the PA mic won't work. Larry slams it down in disgust. He's pissed off, and he walks away. The fans walk onto the court. They confront Indiana's Jermaine O'Neal, who cold cocks a fan. The fans are pelting the Pacers with beer. Well, look, you guys saw all this videotape. Pelting with beer and anything they can find. But Ron says the officials caused everything. Had Ronnie Garrison, Tommy Nunez Jr., and the now disgraced gambler Tim Donaghy thrown Ben Wallace a and Ron Artest out of the game initially, he said nothing happens. Pacers were up 15 with 45 seconds left, but the officials did nothing, and they let Ben Wallace yap at Artest, and that allowed the fans to get wild. It was ugly. And Ron closes by saying the officials, fans, and the Pacers, he leaves the Pistons out of it, were all guilty. You can email us, by the way, folks, asknofilter@gmail.com. Website submissions at nofiltersportspodcast.com. So here's Jay, who says, that was an awesome interview with Greg Landry. I was thinking about when Greg was quarterback, and then Jeff Komlow came in, and then Gary Danielson. Joe Reed was somewhere. He leaves Eric Hipple out. He said, remember Joe Reed? Is he still around? Yeah, he's 72, Jay. Call us. Leave a message or text us at 760-89-BALLS. Gross Point Charlie says, thank you for the negative on Helene St. James. I'm not sure if a lot of people even know that byline. She, of course, is the Detroit Red Wings beat writer. And Charlie says, well, Helene is as boring and vanilla as they come and a shill. You know, we're all in the media. You like some of us and you don't like some of us. I didn't say that about Helene St. James, and I don't really know who did on that program. I'm going to add this from Richard to close the mailbag segment. He says, I thought you guys did a great job the last show with four hosts. Everybody sounded good. A lot of good input. A lot of shows sound bad the more people you had, but not you guys. Good work, gentlemen. Got to say goodbye to the people down in Toledo right now listening. Thank you so much, folks, for being with us. As always, you have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with five locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has nine total locations, and those include Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter. That's in Waterford. They're known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back to them guarantee. And how about this for a kicker? They will give you credit, guaranteed approval. You can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's nine locations we mentioned. Their massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. And you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. for an effortless, hassle-free experience. Power Home Solar is America's fastest-growing solar energy company. It's based right in Metro Detroit, and every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is made right here in the USA. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, help save the environment, and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages for good. Power Home even has financing starting at just $99 a month. So call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And now I see he's popped up in front of us right now. There he is. I've only known him since high school. He looks a little bit older now. And there's Terry Mills, the former University of Michigan standout. T. Mills, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, man. How have you been? First of all, let me say happy birthday to you, Bob. I tell you what, you don't look a day early. They younger, I tell you that. You look the same, man.
Everybody, he looks 80, right?
Yeah, right. That's got only it. Because he looked old before his time. That's right.
That's exactly right. Terry, I've never dyed my hair in my life. People find that hard to believe, and you don't have any hair left at this point in time. You're shaving it all now.
Yeah, you got that right. You got to get rid of it, man. You don't want to be having that George Jefferson look, man. You got to let it go if you can.
Yeah, so you're wearing your Michigan shirt today. You've been the broadcaster for a long time. Larry, of course, big University of Michigan graduate. You guys don't really know each other. Now here you are together. How about that?
Well, hey, go blue, Larry. Hey, yeah, we don't know each other, but I'm sure we're going to cross paths sooner or later. So, like I say, go blue.
Seen each other in some M Club days, and he was always in the middle of a crowd of guys laughing their tails off. And so you knew that his presence was being felt in that group.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I try to, keep them going, man. I always got plenty of stories to tell about the Michigan days.
So, Terry, take us back to your high school days in Romulus, winning Mr. Basketball in 1986. Why the decision to go to Michigan? I'm sure Michigan State recruited you hard. I'm sure everybody else recruited you hard.
Well, Michigan just seemed like it was the place for me to go. You know, I thought that Coach Bill Frieder did an excellent job at recruiting me. Very relentless. I mean, in my high school, walking up and down hallways every single day. So it was just one of those
that things. Sounds like Frieder.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, I mean, what a recruiter, man. I mean, he laid it out there, man. And I tell you what, I couldn't be happier with my decision, you know, moving on and then going on to win a national championship, actually graduating from the University of Michigan and having a full circle to come back around and actually be able to call the games for the University of Michigan is a blessing.
You just got your degree recently, right?
Oh, man, it's been a minute now, probably about maybe 10 years.
Oh,
10,
really? That long? Oh, yeah. Because I read about it the other day.
About 10, maybe even 15. I think I did it as soon as I retired from basketball. I think I went back and, you know, I think I had about 15 credits to do, and I went back and got it done because this was something that I wanted to pursue, whether it be basketball coaching or getting in the media aspect. And, you know, you always kind of need your degree in order to do those type of things.
I keep hearing everybody telling me about a Michigan guy, Bo. He's got to be a Michigan guy. What the hell is a Michigan guy?
Man, a Michigan guy, man, a Michigan man. That's what they call it, a Michigan man. I think that's a very a good question. I think that's a selfless person to start with that cares about others and not being a very selfish person. I think it starts with that. And just being very respectful and in the community and wherever you whatever you do. I mean, if you look at anybody that's associated with Michigan, most of the time they'll say, hey, that's a hell of a guy. That's a nice guy and very respectful.
The team.
Yeah. And the first time we heard that was the guy who made that quote too, Larry. A Michigan man will coach a Michigan team. Take us back to the fateful year of 1989 when Bill Frieder was going to Arizona State on the verge of the NCAA basketball playoffs, and Shem Beckler said, out of here, and Steve Fisher took your club over.
Yeah, you're talking about a meeting that we really didn't feel like Bo even knew anything about us or even cared about basketball. And all of a sudden, we've got that meeting sitting there inside of Chrysler, and he just goes off and goes on a tangent on every single player, whether it's Glenn Rice, myself, and hey, Mills, I don't want to hear another word out of you. I want you to get on there and battle, and you're battle tested. And Higgins, I don't want to hear another word about you talking about transferring. If so, I got these papers in my pocket. Glenn Rice, you need to be the leader that you need to be. And I mean, it was very inspirational, you know, just to hear that he cared, and he kind of lit a fire under us and said that, hey, Steve Fisher is going to be that guy to lead us. And that he did.
Man, it sure doesn't sound like it was very clean and smooth and nice. It sounds just the opposite.
Yeah, it was. I tell you what, we had a lot of guys that, you know, had an ego, kind of tough guys that you weren't going to say anything to me. I tell you what, you could have heard a pin drop, you know, after Bo got done. And so we kind of joked around as we stretched out and said, well, Glenn, why you didn't say nothing to Bo? You know, you want to fight everybody. Why you didn't say nothing to Bo and man up to Bo? And everybody just kind of started laughing and saying, hey, we wanted no parts of Bo. I mean, as tense as he was then, I mean, he almost like he wanted to reach out and grab you around the neck.
Yeah, Bo was a guy that changed the atmosphere of a room when he walked in, period. Yeah. But when he challenges you like that, you guys obviously responded to it very well and went out and did what he was suggesting. What was the impression of Fish at the time?
Well, the impressive Fish at the time was that we knew he could lead us. I mean, Fish wasn't a stand back coach by no means. We definitely heard his voice in practice all the time. He did a good job at running practice, if you will. I mean, Frieder kind of sat on the sidelines, let him kind of coach the team and go through things. So we were used to hearing his voice, and all of a sudden it was his team. He could do whatever he did. And I think what got him on the right track was that he met with every individual player once he was, you know, appointed head coach and said, this is what I expect of you. Terry, this is what I expect of you. I expect you to get down low. I will get you the ball. But when you get down there, we need you to score. We need you to take care of business. But on the defensive end, I need you to block shots. I need you to rebound. So I think he broke down everybody's role. And that's something that probably we need it because, I mean, you're talking about a team that when we had all Americans on that team, we got guys that averaged 25 to 30. I mean, yeah, 5, 6, 7 guys that averaged 30 probably in high school. And we all know the old saying, there's only one basketball. And, you know, hey, we wanted our shots. Everybody wanted shots.
Did you, the thing with Bo, did you guys see it coming or was this coming that you knew something sooner or later was going to happen like this with Bo?
No, we had no idea. No like idea. I say, that night before, it was kind of like Coach Frieder gave everybody a call. I remember receiving a phone call. I was roommates with Mark Hughes at the time, and he was like, "Man, Frieder's on the phone." I'm like, "It's 2:30 in the morning. What does he want?" And he was just basically telling us, "Yeah, he made this decision, and you guys are gonna, you know, when you grow up, you're gonna understand about these decisions." And he just basically told, he said, "You know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to coach the team," or whatever else have you. So that's the way we were looking at it, that he's going to coach the team. Well, the next morning before practice, everything changed. And all of a sudden you see Bo walking in. I'm like, "What is Bo doing here? Why is he at the football arena? What is he doing walking across Chrysler floor?" And I tell you what, he just kind of lit into us and told us this is the way it's going to be. And that's what it's going to be.
All right, well, now you have grown up. Do you understand what Bill Frieder did, or are you resentful of what he did all these years later?
No. I really do understand what he's done and what he tried to do. You know, when you look at it and you have a family, you got to look out for family and security first. And that's exactly what he did. He went out, looked for security, and he got that. And till this day, I'm still great friends with Bill Frieder.
That's cool. And then Steve Fisher, of course, takes you through the NCAA championship, and you get to the final game against Seton Hall, and you get to the final 3 seconds against Seton Hall, and you're down one. Terry, in preparation for talking to you today, I watched the end of that game. I watched the replay at least 5 times. I still don't see a foul that would have put Rumeil Robinson at the free throw line. Was that a phantom call or not that gave you the national championship when he made those 2 free throws?
Well, I don't want to call it a phantom call. I don't think it was a phantom call. I mean, I thought it was the right call at the right time. And, you know, I don't know if you call it karma or whatever you call it. But, you know, when Rumeil misses those free throws in Wisconsin and we lose that basketball game, he went through a phase where I'm going to go to the arena. I'm going to shoot baskets every single day. Fisher rebound for him. He shot 100 free throws after every single practice. And now all of a sudden, he told us when he gets this opportunity again, he's not going to blow it. He's going to come through for us. And all of a sudden, here it is with 3 seconds on the clock. He has this opportunity. So there was nothing even said. You know, come timeout time, it was kind of like, let's leave him alone, get away from him, and he knows what he has to do. It wasn't like, you know, maybe you see the day that everybody walks up, pats you on the back, like, "Hey, man, we need you to make these free throws." It was kind of like, leave him alone, let him go in his own little world. And that's exactly what he did. And he stepped up, made those free throws.
You made an interesting comment about Glenn Rice a little while ago when you said he wanted to fight everybody. So you have all these various personalities. Did you see anything in the personality of Rumeil Robinson that would have led him to violate the law and wind up in prison as he did? He got out, I think, in 2016. I want you to answer that and tell me if you're still in touch with him.
I am still in touch with him. You know, we talk through emails and things like that. And you know, I did not see that. I did not see that coming whatsoever. I mean, we were roommates coming in freshman year, and I did not see that coming. I think it's something that he definitely can learn from, and I think he has. And, you know, it's going to take him a while to get out of this, obviously, but I think he's headed in the right direction now. And I think his teammates and everyone's behind us, all of us stay in contact with each other, whether it's, you know, 1 through 13, we stay in contact with each other.
I want you to tell us how you got the 2 nicknames, the Sweet and 3 Mills.
3 Mills, that was given to me by George Blaha, believe it or not. I started making threes, and all of a sudden, George just started calling me 3 Mills, and that's it. That's what that was. The name they called me Shug was Sugar Mills. That was given to me by a friend of mine in New Jersey named Ed Lover from Yo MTV Raps back in the day. I think I had a good game against the New York Knicks or something like that. And he's like, "Man, ain't nobody sweeter than Sugar Mills out there." And so it kind of like stuck. And now all of a sudden everyone started calling me, you know, Sugar. And so that kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. So when I hear that name, that's probably someone that knows me from that time of being in New Jersey, New York area.
Yeah. Well, let me give you one. You Sugar Mills, and then the guy's last name was Lover. I ain't going any further with that.
Before you get home to Detroit, where you realize a boyhood dream and you play for the Pistons and George Blaha can give you that nickname, you learned real quickly that professional basketball is a business. 16th pick overall in the first round by Milwaukee. You're traded 2 days later. You wind up in Denver. And halfway through your rookie season, you're traded again. You're traded three times in your first year in the NBA and you wind up in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, what a business. Starting out being drafted 16, all of a sudden they tell you that they're going to trade the pick. I say, okay, well, where am I headed? They say, well, we can't tell you until July the 1st when the cap goes up. So you're kind of sitting in no man's land about where you're going to go. I took an opportunity to go try to play over in Greece. That didn't work out. I end up coming back, going to Denver, and then traded that same time to New Jersey. All of a sudden, you know, I'm playing for Paul Westhead. I mean, nice guy. I mean, they had knocked us out of that tournament that year, you know, with Loyola Marymount. So you want to talk about some guys running. Wasn't the best record in the world, but I tell you what, we had a good time while we were there. I mean, it was a fun style of play. We weren't winning or anything like that. And then all of a sudden, I find myself traded to New Jersey. And, you know, you're still a young man. And I think Willis Reed was the GM at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Willis Reed called me and said, we made a trade. We made a trade for you. And, you know, we're going to love having you here in New Jersey. And me being a young guy, I told Willis, I said, well, I tell you what, I'll be there next week once I pack up. And thanks for having me. He said, no, you won't be here next week. You'll be here tomorrow. Yeah, this is not you figure it out the way you want to. You know, when you're traded, you go and your stuff follows you. That's the way that works.
Well, ironically, one of the problems in New Jersey was your fellow Detroit native Derek Coleman, who was kind of, you know, he had that position. So you leave New Jersey and you sign as a free agent with the Pistons. You're thinking, man, I get to play with the bad boys. But you really didn't, because you just played like a year with — they were breaking up, and you played, what, a year with Isaiah and a year with Lambeer and a year with Joe D?
Yeah, I played a couple years with Joe. I want to say a couple with Isaiah, you know, but like you said, they were breaking apart. I think Vinny Johnson left, John Selly left at that time, had a couple years with Bill Lambeer. I mean, what a great experience, you know, but you could still see that fire there. I mean, when you would go to different arenas, I mean, people would let it be known that, man, we hate you guys, man. We hate you to death. And I used to just love to see Bill Lambeer go in arenas, because he used to just like, bring it on, just bring it on, you know, just, you know, come with it. And I always said Bill Lambeer as a teammate, you hate him. If you got to play against him, you'll love him as a teammate.
It's nice to have that guy that's a lightning rod too, though, that kind of lets you other guys go about your business while one guy's taking all the grief for it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, he was all about the Detroit Pistons. He did not care about no other team, no other person or whatever. If you wasn't a Detroit Piston, then you wasn't in his fan club.
What was the best and worst franchise you played for in the NBA?
Ooh, best franchise, I would have to say probably the Miami Heat. First-class organization. Pat Riley, I mean, they're just top-notch, and they go about their business the right way. I think they're a very loyal franchise as far as players are concerned. You know, it kind of almost takes the business part out of it, you know, where you find yourself going certain places, and you may say, well, I should be playing, but all of a sudden the business side comes in it and say, well, we're going to play this younger guy because this is our up-and-coming future, but, you know, sorry, but, you know, we want you on the team, but you're not going to play a whole lot. So you understand the business aspect. And it usually takes you about 7 to 8 years to really understand the business aspect of it. And I've seen it. I've seen other guys go through it, you know, as me being a young guy coming up. And I'm like, man, this is a very, very cutthroat business.
Yeah, you go from winning a national championship and all the love and adoration that goes along with that and the Michigan – faithful that are encompassing you, and then you're thrown right into it and traded, and bing, bang, boom. Okay, it's about what's best for T. Mills right now.
Yeah, you're right about that. Those are the decisions that you have to start making, is what's best for you. You know, especially once that career starts to wind down, you've got to make those decisions based on on what's best for you and your family.
All right. What was the worst franchise? You skipped the bad part.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it was the worst. You know, oh, okay. I think that, you know, I might have to go back to Denver. I think they were in a disarray, you know, with ownership, new ownership trying to come in, style of play, not knowing whether they want to go with the youth movement. We're going to play up and down. So, you know, not really having any solid foundation at that time. I would say Denver didn't have, and not knowing what direction they wanted to go, because I played on some of them Paul Westhead teams that we lost. Man, I'm talking about 170 to 102. I remember Scott Skiles set a record. I think it still exists today, where he had 32 assists in a game.
Well, he did that in New York when he was with Orlando. I would think one of the problems you had, Terry, playing in Denver, how long does it take you to, because you're running all the time, to get used to the mile-high altitude? Is that tough?
Oh, that's very tough. And I'm going to be honest with you, Bob. What happens there is that you get in shape in Denver, you're fine, you could run all day long. You go on one of those 7-day trips back on the East Coast and come back, man, you got to get your breath all over again. It's like, man, what happened? You know, so it is an advantage there, playing in Denver with the altitude like that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I used to play a lot of golf out there, boys. And I'll tell you, we tried to play at least 27 holes, sometimes 36 holes a day. Trying to do the last nine was almost impossible. Going up and down them damn hills, you had to be a billy goat.
Yeah, but keep in mind, Terry, that you were a serious athlete. Denny and Larry Sorensen were only baseball players. So,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, as Denny, did it have any effect on his golf swing or
no. The
ball went, or was that just normal, you know?
All I know is my sinker didn't sink until it got over that fence about 380 or 400 away, because the ball reacted differently out there.
That's interesting.
Sure.
Yeah, well, interesting stuff.
And I'll tell you, playing golf out there, the ball could go 70, 80 yards further than any other place I've ever played in the world.
Terry, at one time in your life, you really thought seriously about being a coach, and Pat Riley, whom you mentioned earlier, was a tremendous influence. And I know Doug Collins was too, even though he did some things you didn't like. And he said to you, Terry, someday you're going to understand. So you were an assistant coach, like at a community college in Detroit, another team. So what led you away from coaching, and why did you decide not to do that?
Well, you know what? I was very interested in coaching. You know, when you're at a junior college level, I mean, to be honest with you, Bob, it's almost like babysitting. You know, I mean, you've got to take care of kids. These kids are into this. These kids are into that. And it's like, man, I didn't necessarily sign up for this. This is not where I came from. I came from a Division I where you were held accountable at the University of Michigan. And you would think that every college would be that way. Well, it wasn't, especially at junior college. And, you know, I got an opportunity that came up. A good friend of mine named Pete Scorch, who was a TV guy at Michigan, I mean, at the Pistons at the time, he took a position at the University of Michigan. And he said, well, hey, I want you to come in and audition as doing the radio. I think you would fit in perfect with this situation. And I'm kind of like, mulling it around like, Pete, I really don't know. I'm really trying to get after this coaching thing or whatever. He said, man, just come on in, give it a try, audition. I had an opportunity to audition with a good friend of mine right now, as Matt Shepard, and had opportunity to come in and audition with him. And once I auditioned with him, I said, well, is that it? And he was like, yeah, that's it. I said, will they actually pay you to do this? And he was like, don't pay anybody. Yeah, they do actually. Yeah, keep that a secret. I'm like, man, you know, outside of taking out, you know, the vulgar language and things like that, because it was like, I watch every Michigan game anyway at home. You know, I might have a cold adult beverage in front of me and cussing and swearing at the TV. And those are the type of things you can't do right now. But I mean, it's nothing more than I would be doing anyway. So,
well, you come from a great basketball family. Grant Long's your cousin, and John Long is your uncle, and they've been stealing money too, doing broadcasting these last number of years.
Oh man, they've been stealing. You're telling me, man? They didn't tell me anything about it. You know, they say you go ahead and do this coaching thing over here. You don't know anything about this here. And I tell you what, it probably doesn't pay as much as coaching, but I tell you what. I wouldn't change it for the world, Bob, because you know, you don't have to have your emotions into it. I mean, you do have your emotions into it, but once you take that headset off, you know, you're pretty much, you're done. You know, you don't have to, you know, worry about this kid, that kid, did this kid get home? Did you feed this kid? And I had been down that road, but it's just less responsibility. But I will say the emotion is still there, especially doing games for the University of Michigan. And that's simply because of my blood, sweat, and tears in that uniform. When Michigan lose a game, man, when I first started this, Bob, I would almost have tears in my eyes. Like, we get on the bus, and I'm kind of like, I didn't play. Why do I feel this way? You know, I'm like,
tell me, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you cry in basketball? We don't do that in baseball.
Hey, man, we don't show it. We cry in the locker room somewhere the bus and things like that. We don't show it, but tell you what, it's a lot of emotion in those games.
We can talk about it off the air, Terry, but your broadcast partner, Brian Bush, and I did games together for 4 years on TV down here in North Carolina doing baseball. So I got some dirt if you need some on him.
Yeah, I could use some on Brian, man. I mean, he's a great guy, man. I love him to death, man. And, you know, young guy really trying to find his way, hard worker. Can't say enough about Brian, man. Love working with him.
Did anybody ever come with a rose around a gift to be a coach anywhere? Head coach?
No, not at all. You know, I'm gonna tell you what, that's probably one of the hardest things is getting into coaching. I think it has to come along with someone speaking on your behalf or something like that, because maybe. I think I was going about it, I guess, the way that anybody else would go about it. You know, I would fill out an application online, I'd mail it in. They would mail me back a response that, hey, we found somebody else, we're not interested. And I bet you I've got a ton of letters like that. And I'm kind of like, well, maybe this ain't the way you're supposed to go about it. Maybe you're supposed to call somebody like Bob Page, and Bob Page knows another guy, and Bob Page can get me in the door.
You know, your cousin Grant called me about 7 or 8 years ago. He says, Bob, I want to get into broadcasting. Help me out. What am I, the godfather?
You could be. I mean, you've been in this game for a long time, and you know a lot of people. And
been taking credit for my broadcasting.
and you know that's true also.
Yeah, those things and those relationships go a long way, especially when you're trying to get into them. And, you know, if you get a good guy like yourself that, you know, you can attach your name to it, it definitely helps and it goes a long way. And
Terry, it's been a tumultuous time at Michigan for Michigan basketball. I have a world of respect for John Beilein. I just thought he was a wonderful coach, a clean program, doing the right thing, graduating kids. I was so disappointed when he left for the NBA. Were you shocked that he did so? Did you try to talk to him and say, John, you don't want to be in the pros?
You know what? We used to talk, and I used to tell him that. I used to always say, Coach, that's just not for you. You know, I would just say, you know, these guys don't – they don't have that same, you know, pedigree of what you're about. You know, he's a family man. He wants the kids to eat together and do things like that together. And I said, Coach, that ain't what's happening here. You know, you want to watch film. I said, man, these guys will tell you to go fly the moon. You know, I mean, when that bus stops, guys are going in different directions. They're not sitting down eating together. I mean, you may eat with a teammate, but this is my time to go about and do what I want to do as an NBA player. So, it was something I think that he really, really wanted to try. And I think he had accomplished everything he possibly could. So he just wanted to go out there and say, hey, let me give it a try. And he's not shameful to be able to say, I've talked to him after that and just said, you know, it just wasn't for me. And I said, well, Coach, you had to find out your way. And, you know, I'm glad you did.
And I can't imagine the tougher job in the world to, once you get there, to stay there. With all of the pressure that comes with it, with these kids and what have you. Like you said, everybody goes their own ways. This isn't high school anymore. So you can't really tell them, hey, you got to wear brown shoes. You got to have your shirt and tie on. You got to have this, and this. Can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know it. You know it. You've been through it, and that's just the way it works. You know, I mean, like I say, guys go in their separate directions. When that bus pull up to the hotel, they're on their own. I'll see you at shoot around. I'll see you at bat practice or whatever it is. This is not, no, hey, we're going to all go out as a team and eat this big Italian meal. No, we're not, Coach. I'm going somewhere else.
You know what I hated, Terry? When John left Cleveland, so quickly, the implication that there was some racist behavior on his part in that meeting.
Yeah, I mean, that's just so far from the truth that is unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about a guy that I would literally have conversations with every single day because we almost sit next to each other, across from each other on the airplane. And, you know, I would do the coaches shows and things like that. And I mean, I just couldn't believe that they were even saying anything like that. I mean, you're talking about a class guy, first class guy. You know, I could actually see him being a GM or something like that. I mean, I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, you would want him working in your organization. I could tell you that. I mean, just a nice guy, you know. And I had even told him, you know, after that, I said, Coach, you know what? I said, you know what would be a good idea? Because I talked to him after, you know, the Cleveland incident. I said, you know what would be a good idea for you, Coach? I said, you know what? You should try to get into broadcasting.
I said, easy money.
I said, it's less pressure. It's this and that. And I tell you what, the next thing I know, he was like, you know, hey, you know, I'll kick that around with it. And next thing I know, I see him on the Big Ten Network. And I'm like, I text him and I said, Coach, you're doing a great job. Yeah. Hey, that's your home. That's where you need to be.
Okay, we haven't talked to any. We haven't talked to Terry about the University of Michigan here, which I really want to. So John Beilein leaves and enter Juwan Howard. Tell us about Juwan Howard, the man.
Man, you got to love Juwan Howard. You know, I was one of these guys that helped recruit Juwan in. You know, I was in the NBA at the time, and Coach Fisher would ask me, hey, give Juwan a call, or Brian Dutcher, Coach Dutcher would say, give Juwan a call. We need Juwan. If we can get Juwan, then everything else will fall into place. He's the guy that's going to make it happen. And you know what? I was so happy to see that he got that job. And I reached out to Juwan when he was in Miami before, you know, the job was even offered and whatever else have you. I said, well, Juwan, let me tell you something. I said, it's not the NBA. I'm going to tell you that right now. I said, I know you're a committed guy, but we're staying at Marriott's. We're not staying at Four Seasons. You know, you know, we're not flying on luxury airplanes. We're flying on charter planes, nice planes, but it's not that all out first class service. And he was kind of like, I understand. And I said, man, it's just a commitment around the clock. And he was like, I'm up for it.
And is he ever up for it? My God, what a recruiting season this guy's had.
Oh man.
Next year, Michigan State are going to be like Duke Carolina and probably for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable what he's done. And I mean, I knew he was capable of it. And, you know, Coach Martelli, we was on a podcast with him the other day, and he said it best, is that he's a branch manager and not a CEO. He couldn't have said that any better, because Juwan is on the court. He's working out with those guys. He's got a bag in his hand. He's guarding guys on the post. And I'm kind of like, Juwan, you're going to get hurt with those young guys. I said, well, you better watch yourself out there, because those guys' elbows are sharp out there, you know, the young guys. So, but, you know, I mean, I love what he brings to the game. You know, I mean, he always preaches about family, family, family. And that's just the way we were at Michigan. And so he has that same value of family atmosphere. We're going to do things as a family. You know, we're going to travel as a family. And, I mean, you got to love it, you know. And I see the carryover. And a lot of those same values was what Coach John Beilein had. And that's why he had the success he had.
Yeah, you could see from his first press conference, he had the emotional temperament. It overwhelmed him a little bit early on, and you could see that he had that kind of a college type, we're all in this together, you know, we are going to eat Italian dinners together, and we are going to stay together as a group all the time, and we're going to be one big family, much like that group that he played with was all those years ago, too.
Yeah, I think anyone that played for the University of Michigan basketball team feels those type of ties, and I don't think nothing has changed with Juwan as far as, you know, him wanting that family atmosphere. I could look at this team and probably say this team has probably got even closer during COVID, because now all of a sudden you guys have got to stick together. You know, you got to do things together. I know some guys even talk about with Austin Davis going fishing. Say, I've never been fishing in my life, and I went fishing with Austin. He wants me to go hunting, but I'm not doing any hunting. So you can just tell that these guys are actually reaching out
And a lot of times you don't really know that much about a player. You may know it on the surface, but with this COVID going on, I mean, you got to reach a little deep to kind of what somebody's family's like, you know, what's going on, what you like to do. And, you know, and I think that that's what's making this group closer than anything else. But I mean, they always were close, but I think it's dug a little deeper now.
Terry, how good's Michigan and how good's Michigan State going to be this year?
Well, I don't think you can count either one of them out. You know, I think
you think they're going to win a national championship.
I think so. I really do. I think they've got all the pieces. They got enough depth out there. I thought they were coming on toward the end of the year. I wouldn't count them out. And I think they were projected, you know, fourth and fifth in the Big Ten. I think they're much better than that. I think they're going to be in the thick of things. And, you know, when you talk about Michigan State, you know, one thing I learned about Coach Izzo is you can't count that team out. You know, just I don't care how you look at it. You know, they may lose two or three in a row, but they're going to find a way to be right in the thick of things and, you know, gain a lot of respect that knowing his teams are going to be around, you know, at the final buzzer.
Terry, thank you very much for joining us today. You have a great day. Like I said, you're as compelling as anybody we've had on the show with terrific stuff. Great stuff and good luck.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on and anytime. And I will be tuned on listening to you guys.
God bless you. Thank you.
See you at M Day, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Bye-bye.
Go Blue.
All right, folks, we lost Bob, which may be a good thing, not necessarily bad, but it's okay. Nobody's perfect. And we will be back Friday after the Lions game and give you our responses to the FLs. It's the first time I've ever said that, the FLs, but I'm going with it from now on. Everybody have a great week. Take care, drive safely, and don't get hurt and wear a damn mask.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, folks.
Happy Thanksgiving, boys.